was born down in the handle. I was brought up by the strap. When the devil starts to show up in your dreams, then it's hard to get your dreams back. If I lost my sense of wonder, you can blame it on the banks. 'Cause the scammers and the skimmers all swim around together, and every dealer has a fish tank.
We got bored, so we started a podcast, man, about the best bar band in the land. This is the Hood Rat Recap. We are your steady stream for the all news and reviews of the unified scene. Hello, everybody. This is stage right Mike. I thought it'd be best if I hung around the upper Midwest, so that's basically what I've been doing. And as always, I am joined by the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how you doing today?
Good, Mike. How you doing? I'm still looking for my Hold Steady reference in the lyrics. I can't find one yet.
So you've seen me. So today is pretty exciting. We're gonna talk to Christian, who was great to join us all the way from Australia. So you've seen I played the Amarillo Kid right off the beginning there. Gasper, have you had a chance to see the Amarillo Kid little short movie video? I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah, it's like a visual. It's not really quite a music video. It's I'm not really sure what you call it either, but I'm loving these things that he's putting out, these like almost like film projects, I guess, that are accompanying the record and this one specifically to the Amarillo Kid. It's just really cool. They have such a cool feel to them. They do kind of feel like music videos, but they're not, like, I guess, contextualized that way. But really cool.
But this kid was by the books always, and that was the part that made me suspicious, because he talked too much about Texas. He said he hated it there, and I guess he didn't seem homesick, but it was just kind of his whole thing. Eventually I told Arthur, and he just said we're lucky to find such a hard worker. But yeah, I knew he was gonna take off.
Yeah, could you call him like a vignette? I don't know if I'm using that word right.
Yeah, I guess. It's, I mean, they're just, if you haven't seen them, they're basically just these snapshots of images all done in the same kind of like graininess and feel to them that he's, you know, putting out, kind of teasing the record, teasing parts of the record that he threw in, like a fish tank and at one point there's the guy with the gun and different things, but they're not like on the nose telling the story of anything like a music video might. They're just kind of cool artsy videos that are going along with the music, you know?
Yeah, I like them because they kind of tell a different story. Like in the, I think he's only got two so far. He's got one for Birthdays and one for Amarillo Kid. Right. And then in Birthdays, he kind of tells about somebody breaking the fish tank, which isn't really the song. It's implied. He said the fish tank was meant to be a temporary home or whatever. But this, he kind of gets more into it on this little vignette. And then an Amarillo Kid, I'm really loving that song. And but I always, especially at the end, because it's got kind of a happy ending where he gets away. And I was like, did he really get away? And I was like, how did he get away? And then this video kind of explains they had a lot of people working with them, and it seemed like they were kind of stretched, and they really wouldn't have the resources to go looking for him because they just trying to keep their business going is kind of what I got out of it.
See,
I don't know.
I kind of take it as like, because he says, I didn't think they had the wherewithal to hunt me. I forget the full line. But
out west.
Yeah, out west, right. And I took that to mean, but they did. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't see it coming, but they did ultimately. So I don't know if he gets away. That's one to ponder, I guess.
It's one to ponder, yeah. A Denver show coming up. Yeah. We still got to talk about the show you went to.
Yep, we have Nashville and Atlanta, which we just are working out the details with Mike. He's going to join us on that one, Mike from the Facebook group. So, and then at the time of this recording, Denver is about to happen this weekend, and we've lined up Jason from Denver who's going to the shows. And Jason's actually one of the first Hold Steady fans I ever like made. From out of state. I was at Brooklyn Bowl. We met up and kind of hung out the whole night. So I guess in a way he's kind of what kicked off me meeting all these Hold Steady fans and befriending them, ultimately leading to our podcast.
Oh, and I promised someone I would give a shout out to him. You know, we always make fun of the oldies groups that I go work security for. I didn't do any oldies groups in the last couple of weeks. I did, what the hell is it called? The Masked Singer, the traveling version. And then I did the RuPaul All-Stars. And what was weird is there's this, on Instagram, I follow someone called Carousel of Becca. And I follow her because she took some really great pictures of a Chicago Hold Steady show I was at. She was taking pictures of the front row. And I think I was at center stage as normal, and she got kind of to the left side, so I was just out by a couple people. But I befriended her because of that. And then she went and took pictures of this RuPaul show, and I was working security, and she just missed me in the pictures too. So it's just so weird how we're seeing Hold Steady fans can just show up anywhere at any time.
Yep.
So I just wanted to give her a shout out. And
so have you checked out the new Craig Finn podcast, the That's How I Remember It?
Yes, I have, and now you're saying there's two episodes? I've only heard the first one so far.
So the second episode went up today. Today is Tuesday, I think, right? Yes. Today is Wednesday. My apologies.
Wednesday. We're still on Australian time.
Yes, I'm still on. I have jet lag. So the first episode, he interviews Patterson Hood from the Drive-By Truckers. And the second episode, he interviews Brian Complin, who is behind the show Billions on Showtime. Both really great interviews. What'd you think of the Patterson Hood one, man?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I know they have that shared history. I really liked the theme he went with about kind of trying to, like, he didn't really look up stuff. He was just trying to remember. It's kind of, I think the whole podcast can be kind of like about memory, because it's called That's How I Remember It, you know, and how people remember things different ways. So he was kind of doing that with Patterson Hood, where they were trying to listen to things, or they were trying to remember shows they did together, and he didn't look them up. They were just trying to do them out of memory. So that was, I like that little twist on it.
Yeah. He said basically this is inspired by the new record. It's actually a line in one of his songs.
That's how I remember it.
And that's where he came up with it, this idea of like how people remember things differently and how like history kind of gets rewritten by how you remember it. So he follows suit in the Brian Complin interview as well. And that's a really cool interview to check out, because so Brian Complin's like a big fan of his for a long time, and talks a lot about, you know, getting advanced copies of records and like how he receives the music, like sits with it and like really listens to it. And he gets into a lot of interesting things. So I highly recommend checking it out, man. It's a great podcast. I'm a little jealous. No, not gonna lie.
I'll make a prediction right here that he'll have Seth Meyers on a future episode, 'cause I know they're really tight.
Yeah. That's
the guy. He's the late night host. I said his name right. Right. I get all my Seths mixed up.
Seth Meyers. It's kind of cool that he's a fan. We used to see him in the city every now and again. Just walking around on the street, you know, because he was doing Saturday Night Live, and then he was doing his own show. But he always had him on his show, had the whole Steady on his show, and had him on the show. And just from that, we kind of knew he was a fan, and it's good to know that he is. It's kind of cool.
So one final thing before we get in the interview here. Last episode, we did the Legacy of Rentals, a first listen. I mean, we put the episode up the same day it came out, so we didn't really have... It was just kind of a first reaction. Now that you've had a chance to sit with it, what are your thoughts?
I love this record, man. I really do. It's, I mean, you say it every time, but it's like it's one of his best ones. Like every time he puts out a record, I'm like, oh, this is his best record. But like he really kind of grows into his own on this record. I wouldn't even mind spending some time like doing a longer thing on it on the podcast when we get some time.
We might have to. This one, I definitely think it's his most consistent record, where it's like there's not really a song I skip over. So I think it's his most consistent. And like we said on the last episode, it really grows with you because it's such deep writing. It really grows with you with further listens. You pick up more details and such.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's. I've been chomping at the bit to hear Christian all the way from Australia. Should we dive into that?
Yeah, let's jump right in.
So, Christian, it's great that you're here. This is Gasper. Can you believe this is the third continent we've done a podcast in?
I know. I'm actually really excited about this. This is, I didn't think we were going to get to cover this show. And Christian was so excited about doing it that I'm like, we have to do Australia now. Because you have a really good attitude, man, and you're all over the whole steady group. And I'm like, we got to.
Yeah, I post there too much a bit, I think. So.
I love your posts, man. I really do. It's you have a lot of good Thanks. Posts. But welcome to the Hood Rat Recap, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm just impressed we all showed up at the same time. We were asking Google the time difference, and I think Google shrugged at us. It didn't even know. So
I know. Christian's talking to us from the future.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's a
date. Saturday. It's Saturday morning here.
Yeah,
so.
It is Friday night for us.
We should ask him who won the basketball game tonight, and we could bet on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like Back to the Future.
Or Sapphire, I guess.
There you go.
Exactly.
He can see a whole day into the future. There you go.
Yeah, I can actually do with Spotify releases, I get them a day in the future, so I have to be careful with the post where I'm just like, check out the new Drive by Truckers album, guys. It's like, oh, you guys haven't heard that yet. Sorry.
Oh, that's cool. See, we should have enlisted him for the Craig Finn record. Because
I listened to that one a day
we
early.
Did a little joke where it was like, oh, we listened to it at midnight, and it's like we're getting because he's an hour behind us, so he got an hour preview on it. But you would have had a whole day. That would have been great.
Yeah, that was a fun day listening to that album.
So you're from Melbourne, Australia? You live there?
Yeah, well, I grew up, as you can tell by my accent, I grew up in the States. So I moved to Australia when I was 18 in 2003, and I lived in Sydney for about 20 years, and I moved to Melbourne 3 years ago.
Okay. Where'd you live in the States?
I grew up in Connecticut. I was born in New Jersey, but I grew up in Connecticut.
Oh, not far from me at all, actually.
Yeah, are you from Boston with the Dropkick
shirt? No, I'm a New York guy. I'm in New York City.
Cool. Yeah, I live pretty close to New York.
So what's the difference between Sydney and Melbourne? It's like, that's like the first...
Sydney has basically, long story short, they introduced a bunch of lockout laws pre-pandemic due to alcohol-fueled violence that killed Sydney's entire nightlife. So there's basically no music and art scene left in Sydney, whereas Melbourne has... in my humble opinion, one of the best and possibly the best music and art scenes in the world, where you can just see dozens of fantastic bands every night. And it's just such a hip city. Like, to give you an example, down the street from the venue where I saw the Hold Steady, there's a record store that's a shrine to the Replacements, and I didn't even know about that until 3 years living in Melbourne.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love this city.
So, and this set of shows was like kind of a double thing, right? Because they haven't been there for, when was the last time prior to the set? I think they said it was 5 years or 6 years, something like that.
It was like 10 years ago,
okay.
Or something.
So it was 10 years since the last time they played. And then the whole world was waiting for music to come back with the pandemic reopening. So this was kind of like a double thing for you guys. Like, this is probably one of the most exciting sets on the whole leg, really. Of what they've been playing, I would imagine.
Yeah, like to give you guys some context, the last gig I saw at that venue is a band that a lot of Hold Steady fans probably love, the Menzingers, and that was in March, right when the pandemic was hitting, and we were all hanging out at the Menzingers being like, yeah, we can't wait to see the Hold Steady in 2 months at this venue, see you guys at the gig, and it was just like, no.
Yeah, and this got rescheduled a couple of times, I'm assuming, or?
Yeah, it got rescheduled twice.
Okay. Yeah, so that's about on par with the same thing happened in Minnesota, and I believe Nashville went through the same thing, and New York.
It was a
not too
it
bad.
Was a worldwide pandemic, mm-hmm. I think we're learning. So it affected everybody.
Right.
So Christian, so we ask everybody kind of their Marvel origin story. So, like, how did you get into the Hold Steady? Was it back when you were in the United States, or?
No, actually, I've got a pretty good story about this. So, I met a girl at a punk gig in Sydney, and I wanted to make a mix for her. But I was what you call a sniffling indie kid. I was really into Bell and Sebastian and like Architecture in Helsinki, Fiery Furnaces, a lot of like twee. Bell and Sebastian have toured with Old Steady, and Craig put them on his last playlist. But they're not a very punky band. So I asked my friend at the time to make me a mix of like punk bands that I could put to impress this girl with my music taste. And all I remember hearing was Your Little Hood Rat Friend and The Swish, and just playing both of those songs over and over and over. And I can't remember anything else from that mix. I don't think it worked out with the girl, but I just remember those songs.
That's awesome. So basically through a mixtape, you get the whole set. That's a great way to get into them, man.
And then there's a second part, which was a few months later, someone I knew at college said to me, hey, the first Laneway Festival, it was a Melbourne thing, it's playing in Sydney, do you want a free ticket? And the Hold Steady were headlining. So after a pretty big event in my life, I went and saw the Hold Steady for the first time play a packed venue in Sydney, and it was one of the greatest rock shows I'd ever seen, and I was just an instant convert.
Oh, wow.
So you want to tell us a little bit about the venue?
Well, there's two venues there that they played in, the Croxton and the Corner. Mm-hmm. So the Croxton is a pretty decent venue. It's a mid-sized venue. Not a lot of like atmosphere or vibe, but it seems to be the headquarters for a lot of Unified Scene style bands. So I mentioned I saw the Menzingers there. Pup are playing there in a few months. Amel and the Sniffers played their last show before they got huge there. So it's a 1,000 capacity venue, pretty decent size. And it's in a really good location. There's a lot of really nice bars around there, and there's like a really vibey bar that people go to after the show. That people go to. I've only lived in Melbourne for 3 years. I've only seen three shows at the Croxton, so I don't really have any good stories about it.
Do you have any idea like what the capacity of the place is?
Yeah, it's I asked someone in a record store. It's 1,000 capacity.
Cool. And was it sold out? I don't even know.
It's sold out. They sold out both shows, I believe. I can tell you about the other venue, though. That's a lot of good stories.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
So the Corner Hotel where they played the Sunday show, that's part of Hold Steady mythology because Craig said it's the best show they ever played was there in 2009. And that's an iconic venue. The opening act on Sunday said that Jack Wright wrote Seven Nation Army there. They have a mural next to the venue I saw Craig took a photo of that has like paintings of Australian bands like Hoodoo Gurus and Courtney Barnett, who are big overseas, kind of like our equivalent of the First Avenue Star.
Okay, cool. Cool. I love Courtney Barnett. Big fan.
She's great.
So let's just kind of, what do you remember? Now you said you went to all three nights, correct?
Yep.
So what do you remember about night one, about going in there? Was the crowd pretty excited? Was it subdued? How was it?
Well, I did the VIP access one, and just from the moment I waited in line for the VIP thing, I talked to other fans, and there was just so much energy and so much fan community around them. It was just great, like, talking to other fans, and then with the sound check, just hearing these songs for the first time, my brain, and hearing all of Craig's awesome stories, which I remember a lot of, was just amazing.
Awesome. Now, did you know many people from the Facebook group?
Yeah, it was like there were a few people I knew in real life, but mostly I would just every few minutes I'd run into someone else from the Facebook group. It really felt like a convention.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've gotten to know a few of the people. In the group through the shows, and it's wild how like now they're friends, you know what I mean? Like it's me and Mike.
Yeah.
If it weren't for the shows, me and Mike would not have met. We literally met in First Avenue, Dallas, who was on the show. We met, in that Minnesota weekend, and I just saw him in Nashville, and we hung out the whole night. And it's wild how you have these whole other friends and friendships outside of your normal life, and it's all because of this band, and I love that about this band.
Yeah, the community was great. I could tell some of the good stories he was telling at the VIP. stuff. I remember a lot of them, but there's a lot of local color, so he talked a lot about his love for Nick Cave, which, you know, got a big reaction from the crowd, obviously, and he told the story of working on a Living End album and of the Apollo Bay song and stuff like that. Just so a lot of good, like, local stories.
Okay. So I'm interested in the Apollo Bay one because I've never really understood what that song was about.
So I think I've told you this story. I've told the story a lot in the group, but that song is what inspired my move to Melbourne. And Apollo Bay is a tourist town a few miles from Melbourne. And Craig told the story of how it was inspired by him. Went to a secluded beach, smoked a joint, drove to a Vietnamese restaurant, had a six-pack of Victoria Bitter, which is this iconic Australian beer that everyone loves here, and then had another drink. So it was a really autobiographical song.
Oh, wow.
I think we talked... I think it was the first line he ever wrote of his first album where he said, "You can't see all seven apostles from the shore."
12 apostles.
All 12 apostles from the shore. I think that was, he said that was his first line that he wrote on the whole album. I could be wrong, but I think I remember him saying something about that, yeah. That's cool.
So now the VIP thing was the, is that like what they do at the other shows where it's a Q&A and they play some songs in Q&A?
Yeah, they had a Q&A both nights where people from the crowd asked questions and they played songs from the sound, they did a sound check.
Nice.
I remember they did Stevie Nicks, and I got, like, really emotional.
Awesome. It's always fun to hear the songs in that setting, too, because it is a little more low-key. They're not going at it, you know, at 110%, because it is a sound check, and it's fun to hear the song in a different way. I go to them in New York and love hearing the songs that way. Was there anything that, besides Stevie Nicks, was there anything that stands out particularly from that set?
I can't remember. I'm having trouble remembering the actual songs that were played. I feel like I'm a bad guest for that. Like, because I used to take notes at shows and take photos and video, but I've decided to not do that this show, to just kind of experience it.
That's
smart.
Absolutely.
I like that idea.
All right.
So
go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just gonna interrupt in kind of our inside joke at this. Did you see what song they played out? Number 5 on night one, Gasper?
I did. Mike has an ongoing thing that Party Pit always seems to be played at number 5. In his opinion, it's a better song than that and should be held later in the set. And that was pretty true for a lot of the set lists I've looked at until recently, and like the last couple of shows, it did show up late in the set. So we were like, oh, they're listening to you, Mike. But apparently when they went to Australia, they were like, the hell with Mike, we're playing at number 5.
Yeah, I thought they were going to play the album all the way through, but they mixed up the set list each night.
Yeah, that was, so the first night was supposed to be Boys and Girls in America, right? Okay.
Yep.
But you're right. When you look at the set list, it really does move all around. And I think you had posted about that it was kind of a bummer to get like a set list of just one album when there's so many things you want to hear. So it's kind of fun that they do mix it up and throw some other songs in, and it feels more like a regular set, I think.
Yeah, Craig talked about that on the third night, where he said that when Separation Sunday came out, they played the whole album one song after the other, and they said the set just felt really dead. And I'm thinking if it felt dead for such a great album like Separation Sunday, it makes sense that they'd want to mix it up for other albums.
I mean, I guess generally I would agree. I do like when bands do that. I've seen the Hold Steady do that. They did it for Stay Positive in New Jersey, I believe. I saw them there. And it's fun to hear the record like that, but generally, I do agree. Like, when you go to a show, you kind of want, there's so many, your head's in a million places. You want to hear so many different things. So, ultimately, I think this is the smarter way. But
yeah, so it seems like it was a pretty typical, I mean, they started out with their Construction Summer, and then the last songs were Massive Nights and Southtown Girls. So, pretty typical. And then I was just seeing the encore was Feelers. So, they've been starting out the encore with Feelers. You know, they've been starting out with a slow song. with the encore, and then it goes into Banging Camp, which is great, mm-hmm. and then
Sequestered
and Killer Parties is the whole encore, so pretty cool show.
Yeah,
and it does kind of seem that like that number two slot of the encore, it's they're going with songs that you wouldn't normally see in an encore, because Banging Camp is a main set song and has been for forever, usually earlier in the set too, so it's fun to see them throw stuff in that slot there. And I mean, just to kind of backtrack to the main set, you guys got Arms and Hearts, which that's not one that they play very often. It's a great.
I didn't think about that.
It's a great
yeah.
song to get.
Yeah, I wish I could remember more of the actual shows, but I don't know. I felt like I was just so in the moment. I was just having someone on the other group said it was like I was having a religious experience when I heard Resurrection. So I just tried to just be there in the middle, capturing the vibe.
So what was your favorite song that they played from that set the first night? Like, what's the thing that sticks out in your head the most?
I can't even remember. This is why I feel bad about being on this podcast. Like, I can't remember the actual shows. Like, I don't know why. Like, was that the night they played Girls Like Status? Or was that
the night? That is the night they played Girls Like Status.
They changed up the lyric in Girls Like Status, which they do sometimes. Mm-hmm. They changed it from song number 3 on John's last CD to song number 3 on the Sunset mm-hmm. Tree, which is a little change, but I kind of like the original lyric.
Right, I agree. I don't understand the reference on the Sunset Tree. That's something to look into.
I can explain that. The name of the Mountain Goats album that it.
Oh, awful. Okay, yeah.
So it's the same album, he just said it a different way. Right. Yeah, he said it Sunset.
He just says it, but it feels less casual, because when he says, like, song number 3 on John's last CD, it's like you're talking about your friend's band, and there's something so funny to me as a Mountain Goats fan hearing, like, such an iconic song by such an iconic band just referred to the way you'd hear someone talk about, like, a local band they're friends with, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, it's great.
So I'm going to give myself up here because I did not realize that line was about the Mountain Goats until you just explained it, so thank you. But that makes total sense now.
So let's see. Night number 2 then was also at the Croxton. That was at the Croxton, yep. Was there a VIP for night 2 also?
Was a VIP for night 2, yeah. It was a different host, and there were some different questions.
Do you remember who the hosts were for the VIPs?
The first one, I believe, was Dan Condon, who's like a music journalist. And the second was a host from Double J, who's kind of like... So we have two independent radio stations in Australia. Triple J plays a lot of like youth-oriented music. A lot of bands you might know, like Gang of Youths, get big mm-hmm. on Triple J. And then Double J is more like an adult indie rock station, so a lot of the Hold Steady and other bands like that would get played on Double J. So it was the host from Double J.
Okay.
Hey, can I give it a shout out to the support act
Absolutely.
On Saturday? That'd
sure.
be cool.
For sure.
Because my favorite band in Melbourne for the past 2 years has been Romero, who are this fantastic power pop band. I just can't shut up about them. I love all their songs. I love all their live shows. I've seen them like 4 times before Saturday. And seeing them open for the Hold Steady was just a huge thrill for me.
Okay, this is a good opportunity to... So we do a segment on the show called The Meatloaf to the Billy Joel, where we ask our guests to pick a group that they feel either reminds them a lot of the Hold Steady or is a band that every Hold Steady fan should know. And it sounds like this is a perfect fit for that. So...
And The Meatloaf to the Billy Joel...
Yeah, so Romero are primarily a power pop band. They don't remind me that much of the Hold Steady, even though the Hold Steady were mentioned in a power pop book once and do sing a lot about power pop. But it's very like 70s, very influenced by Big Star and by bands like Royal Headache and Sheer Mag, who have just been coming out recently. and they just have these like really fun, really catchy songs, really upbeat stuff that it, like every time I listen to them, I get really pumped for a night out. And yeah, they're just, I wouldn't have picked them to support the Hold Steady personally, but I love them and I love getting to see them open for my favorite band.
Awesome. So like what song, so we'll put in a sound clip here. What song would you like to hear as a sound clip right here?
I'd say Troublemaker. It's their first single and the one that really got me into them.
Sounds cool. Awesome. So, and then I was just looking over the Night 2 sound list, and it looks like you got that number 5 spot again. You got something. You got Navy Sheets at number 5.
Yeah, that was a fun song to hear live. I didn't expect to hear that one, but I guess it was on the album.
How did the crowd react to that song? Do you remember?
I can't remember. The crowd reaction was weird because, like, I thought everyone would be like moshing and putting their arms around each other for each song, but there was like a no moshing rule, so it felt like we were all like in our own zones, like singing along, and but like people were going crazy like for every song and like pumping their fists, and like one of the guys from the Facebook group whose name I can't remember was doing the cool like Craig Finn dancey stuff for every song.
That explains a lot though, because when I was watching some of the clips that people posted to Facebook, I remembered thinking like, wow, it is a very different reaction to what I've seen at other shows, and if there's a no moshing rule in effect and it's keeping everybody a little more subdued, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, there was a no moshing rule, but it's weird that people obeyed it, because when I saw a local punk band called Civic at the Croxton, and people pretty much ignored that rule. So
that's because Hold Steady fans are like the kindest people in the world. They really are. So they're gonna follow the rules.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So now we had on the last episode, we had the polite crowd in Canada, and now we got the no moshing crowd in Australia. That's
so one of the other things that stands out about this set list is this is the first time, I'm assuming, that Unpleasant Breakfast is played in Australia live.
Yeah, we did the Woos.
Now, do you know Mike Lochner from the Facebook group?
I think he went to
the Melbourne shows, but he's gotten a, like, part of his persona has kind of become Unpleasant Breakfast, which we'll go into a little bit more when we do the Nashville shows, but he is the guy that, if you remember when we were talking about the Minnesota shows, Mike, the guy that was pretty much wooing after every line when they played it.
Wooing right from the beginning. And he had a couple premature woos. Yeah.
So it's kind of snowballed from there, and that's like a little preview to the Nashville episode, and I'll explain what Mike did in Nashville. But so what was the reception of Unpleasant Breakfast in Melbourne?
I mean, I haven't really spent as much time with the new songs for personal reasons. They're pretty heavy songs, so I haven't spent as much time with them as with the older songs. But people seem to, I remember, yeah, people wooing and people like, you know, no one threw toast or anything or like we were talking about, but yeah, it was a good reaction.
I would like, I wonder if we will ever see a show where they throw toast. That's hysterical.
I just remember someone posting on the Facebook group and someone else being like, this is just turning into the Rocky Horror Picture
right.
Show.
It's, Craig had said that at exactly. one of the shows, saying that it's because there was the thing with the ties in Minnesota, and like there's been so many things where it's like it really kind of is becoming the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, I saw like people with piano key ties at the
game. Oh, they did it. Nice.
Yeah, there were a few people with piano key ties and a few t-shirt tuxes and stuff.
So, and I'm not trying to end night too quickly here, but I just noticed the encore, and I think this might be my favorite. This might be the perfect encore for me. So, for the slow, I don't know if it's a slow song, but they started out with Both Crosses, then they go into Adderall, Resurrection, and Killer Parties. I mean, I think that's the perfect encore.
That's a pretty hardcore encore.
And we got Mosh Pit Josh for Stay Positive.
Right, and that's right. So the show basically ends Stay Positive, Massive Nights, Slapped Actresses, which is a great ending. And like you said, you're getting Mosh Pit Josh, and then going into that encore. Which would you say is the best of the three shows? Which was your favorite?
I feel like for me personally, just the Corner Hotel show was best because I was right up front. It was a smaller, more intimate venue, and like I just felt like so emotional. Like I said, just seeing these songs, and like just yeah, that it just felt the most emotional to me. But like I had such an amazing time that weekend. Like it was such a positive experience, and like the Hold Steady are just such a great rock and roll band. Just take away all the memes, all the lyrical analysis, all the thought that I put into this band. Like, they're just such an amazing rock and roll band.
I agree wholeheartedly. So, before we get off night two, I wanted to point out they play Cheyenne Sunrise, which I think I've only ever heard twice in all the times I've seen them. That's a good one to get.
Yeah.
And do you know that Wyoming's the only state in the United States they haven't played in?
Oh, is that true?
Really?
And they mentioned it in Cheyenne Sunrise and Sapphire. So they got a couple times where they mention it, but they've never played there. Yeah.
Yeah, Craig said he imagined that Cheyenne Sunrises were really pretty.
That's great.
Yeah, I remember it was on the I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats podcast. Craig and John from the Mountain Goats were talking about how they would just both write all these songs about places they've never been to and then play those places.
So it was like a reason to go there. Like, it's they're cheating almost.
Nice. Yeah.
So night three, then, looks like they start out with Positive Jams, Stuck Between Stations, and The Swish are the first three songs.
Yeah, hearing The Swish, like, was so cool for me. Like, you know, that's one of the first two songs I heard, and like, yeah, that was so much fun hearing that.
So night three was your favorite night, you said, Christian, or the one that?
Yeah, like it was a really intimate venue. I mean, I don't want to say intimate. The Corner is a pretty decent sized venue, and you know, if you play there in Melbourne, it's a pretty big honor. But compared to the two Croxton shows, like, it was a really intimate show, and I was right up front. And Craig told this story, which I wasn't going to repeat on the podcast, but an article in our national. One of our national websites told the story, so I guess I'll tell the story. Craig told about corresponding with a terminally ill fan and then scattering her ashes in New York, and then went from that into We Can Get Together. So that was obviously a really heavy moment.
That's quite a story. Jeez.
Also, night three also had a crusher encore. It was Certain Songs, which I think they kind of start always the last night. They start out the encore with Certain Songs, it seems like. And then they go into Constructive, and then Hood Rat, and then Killer Parties. So you guys got some killer encores the whole time. the whole weekend.
Yeah, they've I've heard. I think they played Hoodrat every single night. I don't have the set list, but it feels like they played Hoodrat and Constructive Summer every right. night.
There's usually about like 20 to 30% of the set is going to be songs that you hear every night, and then they'll try to push more unique songs so that you're not getting the same set list. But another highlight to point out is so you get Crucifixion Cruise into How a Resurrection Really Feels, which is
oh my god,
one of the best 1-2 punches ever. That's the heartbreaker into Living Maid for the Hold Steady.
Now, you said you did grow up in the States, but and I know they sing about locations a lot. Craig sings a lot of locations, but is there any references in Australia or any slang that you don't understand from the Hold Steady songs?
I mean, some of the drug slang's pretty obscure, and you know, I haven't lived a completely straight edge life, so I understand probably some of the drug slang that I wish I hadn't. But some of the drug slang and some of the sex slang gets pretty obscure, but I think a lot of that is like regional stuff.
I had to look it up too, like pinned. He likes doing a lot of pinned down and pinned back, and I guess that means like you're redlining like a car, like when you're doing drugs. I had to look that up myself.
I didn't know that. And like, you know, like everyone, drug slang is like regional. So like what a bunch of like stoner teenagers in New England would say is probably different than what a bunch of, you know, trash bags in Minneapolis are going to say. Absolutely. Right?
I mean, the line where he says he's looking around for the OC, but he's not talking about no TV. Like, I knew what he meant, that it was a drug reference, and I knew he was talking about the TV show, but I'm like, all right, I don't get the reference. And when you Google it, it's like, oh, it's a common reference for Oxycontin. And I'm like, I've never heard Oxycontin called the OC.
I am very glad that I don't understand some of these references. It goes both ways. Like in Apollo Bay, when he sings about BB, like everyone in Australia knows that's Victoria Bitter, but outside of Australia, people are like, what's that?
Oh, I had no idea what that was. Right.
Yeah, with the references, like I don't know, like it's a regional thing. Like some of the slang, like townie, like that's something that me and my friends would say growing up in. I went to university in Massachusetts. Sorry, I should say I went to school in Massachusetts. That's the line. And townie was the thing that me and my friends would say like all the time. So when he's like townies, I'm like, yeah, those are the people who live in town who aren't the college.
Right. I think that is pretty. That's pretty. Maybe not unique to that area of the States, but that is very common to that area of the States. And I always took it to mean that that's where he was placing that song, that it was in that area of the world because he uses townie. So I think you're right there.
Yeah, I don't know. People always ask me about the States as if the States is one place. But like if I met, you know, I just listened to like the Patterson Hood episode of Craig's podcast, and it's like, if I had a conversation with Patterson Hood, I wouldn't understand half of the slang.
It's got a little bit of that southern accent there.
Yeah. There's one reference that's not drugs or sex related that Craig explained, and he explained this on Twitter, but everyone always seems to get it wrong. So I want to set the record straight on the podcast. So before he did We Can Get Together, he said that Heaven Isn't Happening. Now, most people, everything on the wiki and on Genius say that that's a reference to the song Heaven by the Talking Heads. It's not. Craig said it's a reference to a song by Ted Leo's brother's band, which I'll have to look up, called Heaven Ain't Happening. And he corrected the grammar.
Okay.
So Craig said that on the VIP Q&A, and then it turns out he also said it on Twitter on the listening party for the album. So it's wrong on Genius and on Clicks and Hisses. It's a really minor thing, but it's one of those references I guess everyone's gotten wrong.
It's good to know, though. That helps to make these things make so much more sense, and so I'm glad you brought it up, for sure. All right, so what particular stands out for you on night three? Like, what's your favorite moment?
I think that like someone on the Facebook group said I was in religious ecstasy hearing Resurrection, and I was just like, that must have been it, because like that song is so important to me, it means so much to me, and I was right up front. Like, the band have so much cool antics, and like Craig does all sorts of cool weird stage stuff, and It's what my ex-girlfriend calls sexy Craig bid dancing, which is a hilarious phrase. Just you know, all the stage banter, and Franz is doing jumping jacks, and like, they're just such a fun band to just, you know, watch and experience. They don't just stand there, play their instruments, and get off stage.
Absolutely. Just in general, then, the Australia show is like, I was chomping at the bit to fly over to Australia and see these shows. I'm like, it's just too far and too much cash right now and couldn't do it. If you're coming to the Australia shows for the first time, what's on your list of stuff to hit?
I mean, like, there's so much stuff to do in Melbourne that it's a kind of impossible to list everything. Like, I guess I just found out about the record store that's a replacement shrine down the street from the venue. But, like, just the shows themselves, and then go out for a drink in the bar next door, the Thornberry Loco. All the fans are hanging out and talking shit until like 2 a.m.
Now, is that a bar that the band comes to like on night three and hangs out in, or?
No, well, they during the last show, they said they were going to the Labor and Vain, but they didn't go there. And I saw on Facebook they went to the Old Bar, which is like a really cool local music venue, but I didn't know that. And so I didn't actually meet the band all weekend.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But they did say they'll come back. And I know every band says that after they tour Australia, but I hope they actually mean it, because it seemed like they had a really good
time. I
think
it's considered like that's an important show in the residencies that they do. And they seemed like they did have a great time. The photos that I seen posted, even on their own Twitters and feeds and stuff, like, so I'm kind of hoping that they do go, because I'm gonna make that trip at some point. I just don't know when, but
it should come down. Like, there's a lot of quote unquote unified scene bands that are always in Australia. I think Frank Turner's been here like 8 times or something. Like, he's always Frank Turner's always out here. Against Me are always out here. The Mountain Goats are always out here. Pup are always out here. So there's a lot of bands in like the wider unified scene who love Australia. So there's it, like, the Hold Steady, like, they definitely have a fan base here. That could just be my bias, but it seems like they have a real fan base.
Now, have you traveled to see them at all, or traveled to see other bands? Like,
No, the only time I went and saw, it was actually a pretty hard choice, but they were playing Golden Plains in Melbourne when I lived in Sydney, so I traveled to see them. And that was also the same time that Gaslight Anthem were doing a traveling festival, so I decided to see Hold Steady instead of Gaslight Anthem, and then I saw Craig at the Gaslight Anthem gig. But I traveled from Sydney to Melbourne to see them at Golden Plains Festival, which also had, like, Bell and Sebastian, Justin Townes Earle, Joanna Newsom, Hawkwind. It was just a great lineup all around. But yeah, so I've only done that once. And the Hold Steady are probably the only band that I would really travel to see, nice. I think.
That's actually something that I've been doing recently, is I've been trying to get at least once a year out to another city to see them, particularly the Hold Steady, and I highly recommend it. It's so much fun to go see another place and see that band in that other place, and then get to know the community from that place, and it's a big part of what these guys are about, and I do highly recommend it.
Yeah, and like you said, Gasper, I know you've been going by yourself. I've gone by myself to shows, and like you said, it's like a family. You meet everybody there, and so you're never out by yourself at all, really.
And this is a band that's kind of almost unique that you can do that with, where you go in by yourself, and it's not like you're bored and there's no one around you. It's you immediately make friends. Like,
I go to a lot of gigs on my own. I don't really make a secret of that. And yeah, most of the time, like, you'll talk to like one or two people, or hopefully run into someone you know. But at the Hold Steady show, like, literally from the second I got in line for the VIP, everyone was just instant friends with everyone.
That's awesome. All right,
and I wanted here, Christian, I was going to read your own words back. I was looking through your social media here, and I really like what you said here. So here's what you said. You said, I post so much negativity here, so I'm going to stay positive tonight. I saw my favorite band, The Hold Steady, and as they say every night, there was so much joy in the audience and the songs. I laughed, I cried, I levitated. I know I talk about the band too much, but they brought me so much happiness, and I love the music and the community. I hope everyone has something that brings them that much joy. So I think that really summed it up perfectly, what being a Hold Steady fan is. I thought those were great words. So
yeah, thank you. I'm glad you liked them. I did post that. Yeah, that I felt it good to inject some positivity on my feed, and I did feel it's been like 2 weeks and I'm still buzzing from those shows. Like, it was such a positive weekend.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have shows that I saw years ago that I'm still buzzing over, to be truthful. So
yeah, it's a great community. And I'm hoping if any of the Melbourne people are listening, I'm hoping to see people at some other Unified Scene shows coming up, and you know, just I hope the community can continue, not just with the Hold Steady shows, but with all these bands, you know.
Yeah, and I don't even think I told you this, Gasper, but we did get contacted from another Australia fan that wanted to come on. I said, well, we got Christian, so we're gonna have to fit somebody. I told him we'll fit him on some other future episodes. Oh, nice. So really great response from Australia. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a really cool thought. I agree with on the other bands, that Unified C bands, like I've learned about a lot of music just from being in this community. And there is so many great bands that are like loosely associated. Like, I recently discovered Spanish Love Songs through one of the people, Beth in the group, was talking about them, and I'm like, oh, I gotta check them out, and they've become a band that I really love, and it's so much fun to discover music that way, you know.
Yeah, when I was at that Romero gig on my own, their album launch show a month before the Hold Steady, there's just a guy in a Spanish Love Song shirt. I'm like, I gotta chat to that guy.
That's a great band.
They're probably, I when I describe them to people, I'm like, they're so much fun, but they're the most depressing band I've ever heard, but they're so much fun.
Yeah, they remind me a lot of like Off With Their Heads and PQ, mm-hmm. PQ, they're just fun, right, and depressing.
They kind of remind me of the Mountain Goats, but it's even more depressing, I would say. I don't know. They're they're fun to listen to.
Yeah, put that on their as a press release.
The Mountain Goats, but more depressing.
And somebody else in the group just referenced, there's a group called Good Looks, and they got a song called Bummer Year, or their album's called Bummer Year, and that's a great song. I think it does a really good reference of what's going on right now. I really like that song.
I don't want to plug too much of my Hold Steady internet fandom shit, but I do have a playlist called The Unified Scene that I've been working on, which is, I've tried to have a mix of bigger bands like Frank Turner and Sam Fender, and a lot of smaller bands who are influenced by the Hold Steady. I found, like, names escape me, but like lots of smaller Hold Steady influenced bands as well. And I like the idea of it being a community.
I don't know if I didn't know or I forgot that was your playlist, but I do listen to that playlist. I kind of like it.
Thanks.
I'll have to check it out.
It's on Spotify, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's on Spotify.
I've definitely checked it out.
Yeah, what have you guys been listening to lately besides the Hold Steady? Like, you just told me, like, what was the other band that was besides Spanish Love Songs?
I said I like Good Looks, I think is their name, and it's called Bummer Year is a song in their album that's really good. And then somebody else in the group turned me on to Wet Leg. Have you guys heard Wet Leg yet?
Yeah, they're huge. They're supporting Yeah Yeah Yeahs and doing a sold out show here. Nice. They're getting really
a record that I think I've had on heavy rotation, like almost to the level of a Hold Steady, but not quite. The new Spoon record. I know that's probably not a Unified Scene type of band, but like,
I mean,
that record is,
they're still an indie rock band.
That record's amazing how good it is. Like, Spoon is, I've always liked Spoon, but this record in particular is like, wow, did they really nail it. So I would definitely check that out.
Definitely check that out. Yeah.
I'll give that one a listen for sure. I saw Spoon at the same festival I saw the Hold Steady at a different date, and they're one of those bands I've always wanted to give a proper listen to.
Yeah. And so I've been listening to Kendrick Lamar's new album, so I guess I got nothing there, guys. you guys got anything else you want to cover? Or anything we forgot to talk about?
I mean, I could you know, going to the trivia that he talked about in the Q&A stuff, he just dropped a lot of, like, trivia stuff. So, like, he talked about how they recorded, they have a songwriting credit on the album by the Australian skate punk band The Living End. I don't know if they're really known outside of Australia, but they shared a producer. So Franz did string arrangements for their album, White Noise. The album's called White Noise. The chorus is literally White Noise. So Craig got a songwriting credit. I don't know if it's on that song, but on that album. They talked about Game of Thrones, how they, it was pretty much, they didn't write the song, so they don't get the royalties, and they, the guys kept asking to make it sound more like the Pogues, which they did.
Now, while we're on that, like, how do you guys feel about The Bear and The Maiden Fair as a Hold Steady song?
I know it's universally hated by Hold Steady fans. On Apple Music, it was the number one Hold Steady song for, like, 4 years straight or whatever. And I don't think it was by Hold Steady fans. I think it was by everybody else. But I knew they didn't write it. I mean, George R.R. Martin or whatever his name wrote it. I like it better than most of the fans seem to like it, because I don't, it's not one of their songs, so I kind of put it in a different category. So, yeah, I don't hate it. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. My taste for fantasy metal turns more towards Hawkwind singing Michael Moorcock lyrics, which is a pretty, I guess, nerdy deep cut reference. But yeah, it's fine. They were asked to sound like the Pogues. I had a friend who thought they were the Pogues. So mission accomplished, guys. Like, you did the job you were paid to do. Like,
so my thing with that song is I have the Spotify playlist that someone put together where it's like every single Hold Steady song and Craig Finn song and like songs that that thing is amazing, where it's like even the songs where he kind of guests on and like I've never even heard of that, and it's in there, like it's such a thorough one. And I don't know why, but the bear the Maiden Fair is like always the one of the first five songs that's played when I play it. I'm like, I hit random every time and it comes up every time.
That's not on me. That's on Spotify.
Oh, no, that's
on Spotify.
That's whole, totally the algorithm. I'm like, why? Why the bear in fair again?
My story with the song is like, so we all kind of know, nobody knows, when you tell your friends about the Hold Steady, nobody knows who they are. But everybody knows who Game of Thrones are. So I was having a day where I was listening to the Hold Steady nonstop. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna miss the Game of Thrones. So I went, ran and watched my Game of Thrones episode. And then at the end, they start playing the Bear and the Maiden Fair. And I go, man, I've been listening to the Hold Steady too much. This sounds just like them. I go, I got to stop listening. So, and then halfway through, I go, oh my God, that's got to be them. And I had that freaky acquaintance with it, so I guess the song will always mean something for me because of that.
Yeah, every time I'm trying to get people in the Hold Steady, like I keep thinking of these, like, oh, they're like Springsteen, but like more indie rock, and always like elaborate comparisons, and I'm just like, dude, just tell them they did the Game of Thrones song. They'll know what that is.
It's funny, like, I know what you mean when you're trying to explain it to someone and get them into it, and like that Springsteen reference always seems the way to go, because it's like it's the easiest way to kind of compare the style of music and the storytelling and all that, but it's also a very polarizing way to describe them, because you either like Springsteen or you don't. And I've actually had a few people who don't listen to the Hold Steady because I said they were like Springsteen, so I stopped doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the band on your shirt, like, they've done stuff with Springsteen for some reason. A lot of stuff, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah,
Drop
absolutely.
Murphy's. Yeah. Yeah, it depends. I guess it depends on who you're talking to. I was talking to someone who's a Dillinger 4 and Clash fan, so, you know, that's an easy sell. And, you know, in the indie rock world, like, they've influenced so many bands that, like, you know, that. But, yeah, I tend to go with the Springsteen one. It's just the easiest.
So let me ask you guys, what do you think their most Springsteen sounding song is, if you had to pick one? Because I got one.
That's a good question. Yeah, which song has like the most keyboards? Because Springsteen's got keyboards, and a lot of bands don't. So.
Right. Yeah, I think it's Sequestered in Memphis, just because the way Craig does his voice and just kind of does the chorus, kind of a Springsteen chorus. I don't know. That's what I think.
I could definitely see it.
That's just my opinion.
Craig mentioned Springsteen. Oh, that's another story Craig told. He told a Springsteen story, one of the VIPs, which is he got to spend 25 minutes with Springsteen, who's a fan of the band. He's got him on stage before. He's played them on his Springsteen's played him on his radio show. And then he asked Springsteen to dedicate a song to his partner, and Springsteen dedicated Thunder Road to her on stage. Yeah, so.
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I can't find the transcript anywhere online, but on Springsteen's Quarantine radio show, he played, I believe, Stuck Between Stations, and then he played Tangletown off Craig's solo stuff. So he knows his shit. He's like, yeah. If he got him on the podcast, he would know what he was talking about.
Yeah, and I remember like on Tangletown, he said it was a really good writing, really good story too. So he obviously had heard the song Springsteen. So. I mean, can you imagine having Springsteen say you wrote a song really well? Like,
That's amazing. That's got to be. I think that was the same one he played he quoted a Courtney Barnett song, and I'm like, there's someone from like my music scene who Springsteen like could quote, and my brain was just. But Springsteen loves all the bands we've talked about. Like, he takes his kid to an Against Me show in his autobiography. Like, if he wasn't Bruce Springsteen, he'd be hanging out, like, posting Fest lineups on the forums.
That's awesome. Bruce Springsteen's alternate life. All right, so I want to thank Christian for being our guest and filling us in on all the Australia show goodness. And, I'm Gasper, this is Mike, that's Christian, and all us guys, and all you guys, we are all the Hood Rat Recap.